two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. Maria Chalaos, Ton Bettis with you this morning. We are taking your calls, 801-575-8255. You can also text us your questions at 57500. Rod is in Pleasant Grove. Good morning, Rod. What is your question?
Well, good morning. I have a couple comments to share with listeners, too.
Okay.
Because I've grown a bunch of English walnut seedlings. I've noticed the walnuts dying all over the state. They're dying up in Colorado, too, and I don't know if Ton has talked about it. But most people think they're dying from thousand canker disease. They're actually dying at Purdue University, the study on black walnuts, and they would die back on years that there was not as much moisture. They've got deep tap roots. Maybe Ton can tell us how deep those go. But I've got to fly to Colorado. My father can give some of these away for if people will contact me. But I've got a few dozen English walnut seedlings. They will live. If people will water them, they're susceptible to thousand canker disease because they don't get enough water. People water their lawn looks green, but it's not deep enough for those taproots to be getting the water they need. Tom, how deep do those taproots go?
Well, they don't really. The taproots anchor the tree, and the roots that feed the walnuts stay in the top 2 feet of soil. We water our lawns, though, 6 inches deep, and those roots are anywhere from a foot to 18 inches to maybe 2 feet. And so they need to be deep watered, even the lawn, every couple of weeks to drive water deeper. But you've got to be careful not to overwater if they're in the lawn. There's a balancing act, but at least a couple times a week, you want to drive water a little bit more deeply into the soil.
Can I offer these trees? Because I was going to be selling these seedlings for $20 a piece. We've got several dozen of them. They need to be put into, you know, bigger containers or put into the ground. And if people will just get a hold of me, they can get a hold of me at pleasantgrovehomes.com. That's where my phone number is. But I will happily give these to people if they'll promise to get them in bigger containers in the ground.
Yeah, if you're giving away, we might be able to get your give your number, contact information to our screener. I don't really want to give that over the air just in case. You know, if you're giving away, that's fine. We don't want to become like a tradio for plants.
That's great. These, and, you know, I just want them going into the ground and be happy to give them to people if they'll get them planted.
Yeah. So what I'll have you do is hang on the line. We'll have our call screener get your contact information, and people can call in if they're interested, and the call screener can give them your information.
That's just fine.
Great. Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks, Rod, for your call this morning. Next listener, Ton, says they have an infestation of purslane in their vegetable garden this year. How do they control it?
Hoe it out when it's young is the easiest way to do it. If they let it get bigger and the plants, if they pull the plants and leave them in the garden, they'll just re-root because they're succulent and they have the ability to do it. And so constant vigilance is what we're looking for, and weekly hoeing. Now, they can try something like Treflan or Preen to put in between the rows to see if that will help. Grass clippings to keep the chemicals out of the garden. If you put 2 to 3 inches of grass clippings, that also will keep them at bay.
Next listener says they have a weed in their yard that has a red root. They've been trying to identify it. They think it's called red root pigweed or something like amaranth. Is this the edible plant with edible seeds is the question.
It's related to amaranth, but it's not the species they're collecting the seeds from. And so if the red root pigweed, red root amaranth, it's all appropriate names for it. Red root pigweed's the most common. Now, when they're younger and they're under 6 inches to a foot tall, you can actually harvest the leaves and use them as a pot herb and cook them. That's perfectly edible. But the reason it gets the name pigweed is that when it would come up, the people would harvest it and feed it to their pigs, and the pigs loved it. So that's where it gets that name. And so you don't really want to let it go to seed because it'll produce hundreds of seeds per plant and start going crazy, but I've started to see red root coming up.
All right. Brian is on the line in Syracuse. Good morning, Brian.
Good morning. Thank you very much and appreciate the show. I have a question. I've been looking, been trying to find a guide that I have properly admitted my soil, talking about plants and bushes. I do have 3 inches of mulch down, but I've been trying to find out for areas that are in the sun 8 to 12 hours a day during the summer, what a proper watering schedule would be.
A half of an inch per irrigation, which are you on drip or how are you watering?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, I am on drip on secondary water.
On secondary. And are you using inline or point source? What kind of drip? Do you have emitters to each plant or are you just running?
I have emitters to each plant.
Okay. So there are some formulas that you can look at to find out how much water, but what you're wanting to happen is every time you irrigate, you're wanting to let enough water out of those emitters to kind of get the majority of the underneath the canopy watered. And you want that water to go about 6 inches to a foot deep, and then you cut it off. And with that mulch there, you may only need to do this once or twice a week or even less often, depending on what you're growing. And so what I would do is run it, let it sit for 24 hours, pull the mulch away, and get a screwdriver or a piece of rebar and just shove it into the soil and see how deep the water went.
Okay, great. Appreciate it very much. Thank you.
Thanks so much for your call this morning. Next listener, Ton, says their hollyhocks have been a magnet for pests, especially leafhoppers and hollyhock weevils. They want to know, how do they get them without hurting bees and other beneficial insects?
Environmentally friendly, well, like, there's not really environmentally friendly insecticides. We'll retract that misspeak right now. And you want to use the least harmful products that you can during times when pollinators are not out. So that would be either early morning or late evening. And you would want to use something like maybe triple action would be the harshest I would use. But if you can spray the insects directly, then horticultural soap is probably going to be their best option.
Okay. Next listener says they planted large pots of petunias, viola, snapdragons, etc. in great potting soil. They were blooming profusely, and then almost overnight the blooms were gone. They have deer in the area, but they don't think that they eat petunias. Help. What should they do?
I would maybe check and look up a fact sheet or look up tobacco budworm online. Petunias are very susceptible. Mm-hmm. And what will happen is any flowers that open have holes in them, but it'll greatly diminish the number of flowers on the petunias. So if everything stopped blooming, though, then it may be nutrient deficiency, and they may need to get some like a Miracle-Gro or an Osmocote type fertilizer product and put some of that in there. But if it's just the petunias, I would maybe look at treatment for tobacco budworm and look up some fact sheets to see if everything fits.
All right, next person has a question about garden bean pests. They say something is eating the top of their beans. They're only about 6 inches tall. Eventually, the few leaves drop off, just leaving the stem. What could be causing this?
Grasshoppers love beans. That would be my primary suspect.
And we have seen grasshoppers.
We have, and some areas have them extensively. That would be the most likely, but there could be other insects chewing on them. They could try a spray like Triple Action to see if that will diminish the number of things feeding on them. If they have grasshoppers in their garden area, that would be the most likely candidate.
Okay, next person says or asks, will earwigs eat vinca flowers and petunias? Something that's much smaller than a snail is eating their plants.
Well, if it's petunias, back to the tobacco budworm.
Yeah.
That would be a likely candidate.
What about vinca, though?
Vinca, earwigs could be chewing on the flowers. And it's just one of those things that if you can't pinpoint what it is, a fairly reduced risk spray would be something like triple action that they could spray, or they could get like Thuricide, which just that one's organic. And so they could try Thuricide or triple action to see if that helps.
Mm-hmm. It's so frustrating. Your plants get up and they start looking beautiful, and then suddenly something is eating them.
It is. And just with today, too, people are just becoming less willing to just spray. And I that's great. And so the sprays I'm recommending, especially like the BT that would be Thuricide, is a bacteria that gets into the insect's guts and makes them stop feeding. And so once it's dry, it's fairly safe for pets and people just because it doesn't really harm us. Mm-hmm. And so the Thuricide, I have no problem recommending for this. The next one would be something like triple action, which is a little more harsh, but still far less than something like Malathion or 7.
All right, we're going to take a break, come back with the final segment of the KSL Greenhouse. The number to call, 801-575-8255. You can also text us at 57500.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now, too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
Good morning. Thanks for being with us for the KSL Greenhouse Show. Maria and Ton with you this morning. Phone lines are open for the next few minutes. We can take your call at 801-575-8255. Next listener, Ton, says, what edibles can they grow on the north side of the house with an apple tree on the south?
Well,
I'm confused.
It depends on how deep the shade is, but okay. I would start with gooseberries, currants, and there's a hybrid between the two called Jostaberry or Yostaberry. It's a Northern European hybrid. And I don't speak a lot of other, I don't even speak English well, but the
Saturday morning, yeah, I'm not sure how many of us do, but
that would be about the only food producing plants that you could really plant on the north side of your home and get a decent crop.
Yeah, the north side is just pretty persnickety.
It is.
I wanted to talk to you about, we were talking about earwigs a few minutes ago, and there are some ways to get rid of earwigs that are more eco-friendly.
There are, and it's good to start with them when you start to see the earwigs show up and not when we have zombie armies full of earwigs in August and September. So in the garden areas, there's a few things you can do. One is to get some newspaper. And Meredith Seaver talked about this with squash bugs a few weeks ago. But you get a section of a newspaper, fold it in half, and just leave it in the garden. You know, you don't want to do this on a windy night, obviously. But what will happen is the earwigs will crawl in there for protection, and hopefully squash bugs too.
Mm-hmm.
You just have a bucket of soapy water with just like a 5-gallon bucket with 2 or 3 inches of water in the bottom with some dish soap. And you dump those bugs in there. What will happen is the dish soap breaks the surface tension so that they sink and drown. You can do that every day for a week or so to try to get the numbers down. So that's one way. Another way to do it in the garden is to get some containers, just old butter dishes. Bury them in the ground at ground level, almost like a golf tee. And then what you'll have previously prepared are some holes in the top of the lid, and so that things can fall in, and you put a little bit of oil and tuna juice in the bottom so it smells, and the earwigs will go trying to get it and fall in, and you have enough oil in there that they get coated and drowned. That seems to be a theme with this segment. But that's another passive trap you can make that you can reuse every night. If the tuna oil doesn't work, you can maybe try some oil, some cat food. You know, you don't want some skunks in there tearing it up, but that would be another way to do it. Now, if you're getting earwigs in your trees, there's some commercial products. One's called Tanglefoot that you wrap the tree in, and as the earwigs try to crawl up, they get stuck. So you can do that, but you can maybe even try some sticky tape with the sticky on the outside that you just wrap the trunk with that, so you can cut it off later and do a 6 or so inch wide band, so when the earwigs try to crawl up, they get stuck on that. There's some different trap crops you might be able to use. If you notice earwigs getting into something like some of your flowers, maybe plant those adjacent to other plants you don't want the earwigs in. So there's some trap crop solutions you can use too.
Okay. So just some other solutions for you. Janet is on the line in Sandy. Good morning, Janet. What is your question?
Good morning. I have two ash trees that are probably 45 years old, and I'm getting ash borer treatment on both of them. And I wonder, and I also have some other pines and things that I'm getting the conifer bark beetle treatment on. Do those sprays kill the pollinators in my yard?
Well, the pines and the ash trees are both wind pollinated, and so the potential harm to pollinators will be minimized. Now, are they doing trunk injections or what kind
of? They're doing soil injections.
Okay.
And sprays. They spray the entire trees.
Now, for the bark beetles, that may be needed to where they do a spray, because they have to coat the bark because the systemic doesn't work against them very well. The ash trees, if they're doing a systemic, as long as they're using one that works, that's fine. But to where neither of these trees are really attractive to pollinators because they're wind pollinated, as long as they're not spraying, when there's lots of pollinators maybe in there for protection, they're probably going to be okay. It would be a lot better than, like, say, spraying an apple tree that's in full bloom.
Because I have, flowers, lots of flowers that attract pollinators in between these trees, and I'm just worried.
Well, and the other thing you've got to consider is to protect, are the dead trees worth, not spraying? And so you've got to weigh that out in your mind, and that's just going to be a decision you have to make. But I think that with what they're doing, there's the harm is going to be minimal.
Okay. Because I had bumblebees this year. It was very exciting. I have one more question. That little clovery stuff with yellow flowers, I can't remember the name.
Black medic.
No. Looks like a little clover.
Actually, it is. It's black medic. It looks like a little clover with little yellow flowers on it. If it's on the other one, it could be is wood sorrel, which is sometimes called oxalis.
It's wood sorrel, okay. Yes. When's the best time to get rid of that, and what do I use?
You would use, there's a couple of solutions. One, you could try a pre-emergent in the spring, and you would want to use one made by BioAdvanced, and it's called season-long broadleaf weed killer. And what it would do is it has a pre-emergent in there that's better for broadleaf plants. But in addition to this, if you have oxalis going everywhere, if you get the lawn healthier, so fertilize spring and fall and water deeply, a couple times a week, and thicken that lawn up and mow higher, that will also help diminish the amount of wood sorrel oxalis in the lawn. But I think that you're probably, to totally get rid of it, are probably going to have to resort to a pre-emergent in the spring and then maybe a lawn weed killer spray in the fall.
So there's nothing I can do right now in the summer?
Well, you could try. There's a product made by a company called Image that it's just Image all-in-one lawn weed killer that doesn't have as many temperature restrictions. And you could try that Image, and I found it to be fairly effective against a number of different weeds. And so you could try that one.
Okay. Is that bad for pollinators too?
Well, the oxalis is going to die, or at least be harmed by it. But if you don't have a lot of clover in your lawn or other things in the lawn that would be attracting pollinators, once it's dry, the harm will be minimized. And so you would spray in late evening so that it has a chance to dry down before the next morning and the pollinators come back out.
Late evening. Okay. I appreciate your help.
Yep. And thank you for your concern about the pollinators. That's something that we really do need to consider. So
thanks, Janet, for your call this morning.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Anton, that's it. The show goes by so quickly. We've answered a lot of great questions this morning. If you'd like to find out more about the plant of the week, which was the purple hyacinth bean, you can look at the KSL Greenhouse Facebook page. A lot of great articles and videos there as well.
Well, thank you.
Have a great weekend.
Two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.